Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
Episode. Today, David and I are going inside the episodes titled How to Choose Beyond Your Programming, Parts 1 and 2. So two-parter for this one.
Two-parter.
This is good. So this one was shot in our classroom space. So if you are normally an audio listener, make sure you go in and watch those two episodes back-to-back over and over again because they were killer content. So let's just go ahead and dive in here. So in the first episode, I'll kind of do this in two parts because we're going to cover both in this inside. So you introduced once again the stick person.
Yeah.
So I think the stick person, everybody knows by now what it is that that is a part of your teaching. But I just wanted to ask briefly, because it's always struck me, how has that figure added to your understanding of the conscious and subconscious mind over the years? Because when it was introduced to you very early on and you've made it a huge part of your teachings. Yeah. I'm just curious how over time has it changed how you look at conscious and subconscious mind, or has it just enhanced what it is that you bring to people like me?
Well, it's actually an interesting question because the first thing that comes to my mind when you ask me that question is I remember going through Bob Proctor's material. And the first thing that I was introduced to was a couple of cassette tapes of his. And then I saw him live, where I actually saw the stick person. And back in those days, they did it on overhead projector. You know, it was the clear sheets on an overhead projector. There was no PowerPoint, you know, back then. So that goes way back. But anyway, what's interesting was that Bob did a lot of boxed programs, you know, cassette tapes and a workbook for lots of different things. And I was starting to go through his stuff. And as I was going through it, I noticed that the stick person was in every single one. And my first reaction was like, this is a repeat of what he's already taught. And it's the same thing. It's just a different program. But then I heard him say one time that the stick person was in everything that he teaches, because we're in everything that he's teaching, and that the stick person wasn't just something to see once. It was a tool in which we can conceptualize how the mind works, and it gives us the ability to help think through things. I didn't understand that at first. However, I will say that I completely understand it now because I've been using it for so long. And before I used it for anything, I probably went through several years of going through his programs, understanding it. So it was through the constant use of it and to play with it, to see how they all interact. So you've got your results, you've got your senses, you've got your intellect, you've got your intellectual factors, the conscious choice, the unconscious choice, all the different things that this does. And that was just a very brief teaching that I did of this. Normally, I teach, like when we do Art of Success, I teach from that for the entire first day.
Right.
Right. So it's an extensive, it's an extensive teaching. And I use it in all the teachings, if I'm teaching sales or whatever. It gives a person a real good conceptual idea, allows them to visualize what's actually happening. So yes, I think the more that I've done it, the more it helps me. And I'll tell you this, when I'm up there, especially when I'm doing live seminars, and I'm up there drawing on that board, it brings out a creativity that will often allow me to tap into a different teaching, a different way of teaching it, a different way of explaining it that I've never done before. I never get tired of using it. It is, like Thurman Fleet said, it was a genius tool. Like it just popped into his mind to be able to do it. And I don't know many people that actually use it. And it was, like I said, it wasn't Bob's, it was Thurman Fleet's. And actually, Thurman Fleet created the stick person the same year Proctor was born, 1934. Wow. Yeah, so that's a little interesting tidbit. Yes. But yeah, no, it's totally helped me in my understanding of it. And in my ability to continue to explain it so other people can understand it.
Yeah, and what I liked about this episode is that you did move it from our studio space, which we're in now, into the classroom to be able to demonstrate that. And it does give people, I mean, people who have been to your events have seen it before, but for people who are new to you or just finding out about you and are seeing this for the first time, they get a really clear glimpse as to what it is that you teach. And I love that you mentioned that whenever you're up in front of a large group, you're just kind of feeling the flow and it just kind of comes into you when you're using that stick figure. And I remember the first time you wrote down the RCE underneath, and I was like, what the hell is RCE? And for those of you who paid attention during the lesson, that's your results, your circumstances, and your environment, which leads me into my second question. And all of those play a huge part in a person's mindset. So in the first part of this episode, you mentioned we think in pictures, which clearly we all do. How can a person begin to take that image that they're thinking of in their mind and manifest it into their reality? Now, I caveat this because that's a huge question. Like, and it's individualized as well. But so for the lay person or the basic person who's relatively new, how do we take that image from our mind and just start to manifest it into reality, understanding our results, circumstances, and environment?
Yeah. So the part of the idea here, I think also, and I think people really need to understand this, and you've got to think on it for some time to really begin to understand it. Whatever that image is, you've got to want it because you have to hold that image on the screen of your mind. So if you think about something that you want or you've always wanted or whatever, generally it doesn't take any effort to hold that idea. Right? For whatever reason, whatever your desire is for something. But when you're creating a new desire that very often contradicts either something in your life right now or the way you're living your life now or whatever, you've got to want it enough to where the exercise of your own will can consistently hold that on the screen of your mind in the form of an expectation. You know, it's coming, you're creating it. That's the idea behind it. And when we hold that idea in our mind, part of the key is that we're moving it from our conscious mind to our subconscious mind. To do that, we have to get emotionally involved in the idea, right? So when we get emotionally involved, we're actually, the emotion side is coming from the subconscious mind. That's the emotional mind or the feeling mind. And we want to get involved in the emotion of the expectation, what it would feel like to have whatever that image is in our life, to see ourselves living within that image. So let's say it was a new house. Let's say you wanted like the house of your dreams. Not only would you hold the image of the house, but you would hold an image of yourself inside the house as if you were experiencing it from inside the house. Not as a person standing outside of the house looking at you inside the house, but actually if you were literally in the house, if you were a kitchen and getting a cup of coffee or tea, or you were using the washroom or sleeping in your bed or whatever, you see yourself moving through the house as the first person in that. And then when you do that, you feel, what would that be like? What would it feel like to live in that amazing house that you want, right? Or it could be with a relationship, or it could be with a car, or it could be with a business, it could be with anything. When you do that, you're sinking it into your subconscious mind, and then that is where it really precipitates the manifestation for what it is that you want.
Yeah, and it's not just thinking about it. No. It's actually feeling the energy of it and putting in the work behind it. Right. I think that's where a lot of people, you know, they think they can just sit cross-legged on the floor and bring it into existence, where they have to, you have to do something.
Right.
You have to feel that energy, but also go out and make it work and not stop, right? I mean, that's where a lot of people kind of falter a little bit in this idea, is that they stop when things get hard, things get uncomfortable, things get difficult. If they would just continue to stay that course and hold that image, but also put the work behind it, good stuff's going to happen.
Yeah. And when you hold the image, the other thing that you're doing is you're giving a command to your brain to look for like pieces of the jigsaw puzzle. Right? So you're looking for things that would be opportunities that would allow you to move toward the thing that you want. It's why it's so important to hold that image, because then your mind is constantly like a radar. It's looking for people. It's looking for opportunities. It's looking for ideas. It's harmonizing on a higher level, a higher frequency of vibration, where there's a different set of answers, a different set of possibilities. If you just come from the place that you are now, you think on only the possibilities of what's now. But when you raise your thought to a higher thought, all of the possibilities in the how are at a different level. So you're raising the vibration or the frequency of your thinking to that vibration, and you begin to pull in the thoughts, the images, the ideas, the people, you start to see the opportunities, and then it'll manifest much faster.
And I can only assume that sometimes you may miss those opportunities that are right before you.
Maybe,
many times you forget, you miss them, you don't see them. And maybe sometimes people get frustrated in that moment, but just keep in tune with that and it'll eventually either come back around or something new will present itself in its place.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
I love that. So you had mentioned in this that, can I do something different with my life or am I locked into this information that I currently have? That was one of the questions that you posed in the episode. And this is a question I'm sure most people out there have ask themselves at one point in time. The reason I can say that is because I myself have asked that very question early on when I was introduced to your teachings. Can I do something different with my life, or am I just locked where I'm at and this is how it's going to be for me? So would you mind speaking about why a person would stay even when everything around them is telling them to just go for it?
Safety.
It is safety. For me, it was safety. I was going to be a teacher my whole life because it was safety. I had a paycheck. I had summers off. Even though I hated it towards the end, I was going to stick with it. So safety, huge.
Yeah. So whatever the surface reason is, it's probably different for every person based on circumstances, sure, or whatever. But when you start to get underneath of it, you have to ask yourself, why would we hold on to something that either we don't like or it's not serving us? And it comes down to safety and certainty. There's many things in our life that may make us miserable even, but if there's a sense of safety or certainty underlying that, we're so taught that that's like numero uno in our life, safety and certainty, that we hang on to it. The other thing I was going to mention is that, like, when an opportunity starts to come, because you mentioned, like, if you miss it, the other thing could be that you're afraid of it, right? So the opportunity requires change. It requires that you do something different.
Yes.
And if that represents a fear, you for sure know that there's a safety or a certainty that you have to be willing to let go of in order to step into the new opportunity. I do say, though, that over a period of time, if you get really good at doing that, where you're really linking up the cause and effect of your mind, the emotion that you feel with it, the outcome, the opportunity, the outcome, that fear starts to go away because you become very certain in your ability to create whatever you need, that it'll always be here. You develop a faith, you develop a certainty, you understand the process, and a lot of those irrational fears disappear over time.
Well, and that's got to be the ultimate superpower right there. You talk about being a superhero of your own life when you are able to push the fear aside, because fear is here. It's here right now, but people are able to push it to the side and focus on, I've been here before. I know how to get through this. That's where a lot of people get paralyzed, I think, is they get so afraid of what's to come that they'll go back to safety immediately and won't push forward to that thing they really want in their life. So it's such a superpower. It's like sales. Sales is a superpower as well. If you can master sales, you'll never have to go without for the rest of your life, because if this one thing that you were selling no longer is needed, you can find something else to pivot to and sell there.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I love that superpower. That's great. All right. Let's close out episode one here with this question. And I love how you brought in both the scientific and the religious aspects of this one thing. And they agree on this one thing, that humans are the only living being that has the ability to make conscious choice. And that's what this two-part series was all about, was the power of choice. What would you say to a person who waffles in indecision, like they spin their wheels and get stuck in indecision, and they're afraid or paralyzed that they may be making the wrong decision? Because I hear this a lot from people I speak to. They're so afraid to make the wrong decision that they won't make a decision at all. What would you say to that person to get them off that track?
Well, if I was having a conversation with that person, I would kind of find out where are they in that process first. Because if the person had been studying a long time and they actually had the intellectual knowledge where they knew that there was another way that was available to them, I would say then what they need to do is make the decision. They need to stop waffling and make the decision. A person that doesn't know that, if they would study a little bit and find out the real concrete reasons why this is actually true and what they can do, it might be easier for them to actually go ahead and make that decision. But you're always going to get that initial fear when you first start doing it, and it's scary. Especially depending on what it is. In the podcast, I recommended that people start with things that they're familiar with, you know, like start where you are. You know, it doesn't have to be something huge with like a big perceived risk or irresponsibility in your mind. I get that those are huge challenges with people, but eventually, at some point, if you're going to change the direction of your life, you're going to have to make those choices, and you're going to have to deal with the feelings of inadequacy or shame or guilt or irresponsibility or other people's voices in your head. And you have to learn to silence that stuff and really step into what you want by making a decision. So everything is precipitated by the decision. Decision comes first, and then everything else comes next.
Yeah, and you talked more about that in part two, which we'll get to in a moment. I've got a couple of callbacks I want to let people know about for to go back and study a little bit more, because at the end of this first part of this episode, you talked about the perpetual law of transmutation. Yep. And you did a couple of really good podcasts going way back for some of them. One of them is episode 40, Why We Don't Do Normal. Huge episode around the perpetual law of transmutation. So check that out, episode 40, and we'll link in the show notes below for all of these I'm about to mention. Then there's another one you did, which was episode 100, Delay is the Deadliest Form of Denial. So I'd encourage you to go back. If the law of transmutation speaks to you as much as it speaks to me, go back and listen to episode 40 and episode 100. I'll link in the notes below so you get a chance to do that. So back to, now we're on to part two. Yep. Of this wonderful series that you did. People ask you often how to stop doing something. Like, they'll come to you and like, how do I stop doing this? Or how do I stop doing that? And you said it's very simple. You either choose to stop it or you choose to keep doing it. It's a decision. It really is that simple. So how would you make that clear to someone who may be skeptical? Maybe they, I know that you say it's just a decision, but what does that mean? I don't understand. How would you, I don't want to say convince, but how'd you make it clear to that skeptic around it's just a decision?
Well, when a person is a skeptic to that point, they're coming from ignorance. They're coming from what they don't know, which I get it. Like, I didn't know any of this at one time. But the question would come, what I would ask the person is, what do you really want in life? And if they do indeed want something different, then what do you need to know? What do you need to learn that is going to allow you to move to the place where you're able to actually make a decision? Is there a place we can get to with your own knowledge, right? And then I would give them a series of things to study to help them see that it's not just crazy thinking or crazy direction to be able to do this, but it's substantiated by evidence with many people over long periods of time. I mean, Napoleon Hill interviewed 500 people that thought this way, and they were the most successful people in the world at the time, right? So that, you know, most people don't realize, if you look at Hill's work, you're looking at, because here's this question that comes up that I hear this all the time. People will say, well, what did you do? What did you do? What did you do? He took 500 people. He boiled down everything that they had in common as far as to what they did, and he put it in that book, right? And it's not brain surgery to understand what it was. The key is that they were all principles like desire, making decisions, persistence, you know, these types of things. This is what's in the book. What is it that caused them to be able to stick with those things? And that was acknowledging the desire that they had inside of themselves for what they wanted and really realizing that we're all going to die. We're all going to die. Here's two things that we all have that are for certain: the day we're born, the day we die. In the middle, we get to choose what that looks like. Right? So you have to wake up to the fact that you have that choice. And then you've got to decide, how do you want to create it? What do you want to trade your life for? Is it misery and poverty? Is it complaining and being victim? Or is it really going after to do something that not only gives you great pleasure and satisfaction, but that benefits people that you would like to benefit in your life?
Yeah. And then there are many people out there who may say they don't really know what they want.
All the time.
Chances are, what they are currently doing is not something that they maybe chose on their own, but it's what their parents did or what someone told them they should do.
It's 100%. It's limited experience.
Limited experience.
I didn't know what I wanted either, right? I really did not know what I wanted. And it wasn't that I wasn't exposed to what I wanted. I was exposed to it in the very beginning of my study, but it was so far removed from what I thought was possible in my own mind, I wouldn't consider it. I would not let it come into my mind as a consideration. And it wasn't conscious, by the way. My unconscious mind's like, nope, that ain't it, that ain't it, that ain't it, that ain't it. And when I started looking at what I wanted to do, I couldn't find anything that, I mean, I looked at several different models of businesses. And I remember thinking to myself, every one of these seems extremely deflating to me. But I was looking from the knowledge of what I thought I could do based on past experience. I was not bringing in, oh, I could choose to do something like, what would I really want to do if I could do anything? And then be like, okay, as long as you're willing to learn how to do this, there's no reason you can't do it. I wasn't thinking that way. It took me a while to get to that place. It took me looking at a lot of different things and then feeling like a total dissatisfaction. It was almost like deep disappointment, right? I went after one business. I was seriously looking at doing it. It was a restaurant. And I was really starting to put pieces in place. And I was coming home one day and I just felt like crap. I mean, I felt depressed. And I pulled her on the side of the road. I'm like, what is this? Here's what I know. It's not this. It's not the restaurant. It's something else. And I just need to stay with it until I figure out what that was. And it wasn't an excuse either. It just was like, there was a part of me that knew that wasn't it. And then when this was introduced to me, when my mentor suggested that I move into this field, I felt two emotions simultaneously, complete exhilaration and total fear. And that's how I knew that that's what
it was. That's when you knew you were on the right track.
That's what I knew.
Yeah, when those two are simultaneously hanging out, you know that you're on it.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that's cool. Well, you speaking of experiences, you shared one on part two of this episode, and you talked about you would get stuck and you'd wake up at the same time every night. I believe it was like 2:20 a.m.
2:20.
Every day for like 6 months, telling you if you wanted to live your dream, you'd have to leave. And that, like I said, 6 months of that. At which time you decided to ask your mentor for help, even though you had said that you wanted to do it all on your own. You didn't want any outside influence affecting you making this major life decision. And he flat out told you just quit, which rocked you a bit, I'm sure, because you had financial responsibilities. You know, you had family, you had small children, and the thought of leaving your job was extremely uncomfortable. And he said, and you repeated this over not only this podcast, but another podcast you've done, you'll always get what you need when you need it, which I think is words to live by. And that was your all-in moment. I think we've all had an all-in moment at one point in time, and it was based on you making a decision. So how did you get beyond, I want you to take us back to how you got beyond that air quotes, irresponsibility talk that was going on inside your head and just to be like, you know what? I'm going to go for it.
Well, here's what I didn't say in the podcast. It took me another 6 months to make the decision. Right. I went home and literally started backtracking, and I dove deep into a study around the idea that you'll always get what you want, or we'll always get what you need when you need it. And I started looking at not just my life, but other people's lives. I literally started interviewing people. I had this deep seated need to know that this was true for some reason. It seemed crazy to me to wrap my mind around the idea that that's actually true. So as I was studying it, I started to get to the realization that I was not going to experience it without doing it when it came to this. There was no workaround.
It would be so easy if it was the other way around, right? Everybody would do it,
right,
but that's not how it works.
There's no workaround. There was no workaround. So, you know, it was a real struggle. And then I got to the point, I think this is when I really accepted myself, because the conversation that I ended up having to make this decision was, I need to know. I more than success, more than finding it, more than anything, I needed to know, because there were times where I wondered if I wasn't losing my mind. I mean, I was having such bizarre experiences and doing things that were so non-traditional in the way that we're raised. There were times where I'd be like, am I nuts? Like, is there something wrong with me? This is so insane. This goes against everything everybody teaches. It's so freaking crazy. So I said, you know what? Here's what I can't live with. I can't live with not doing it, getting to my end of my life and not knowing. However, if I do it and I'm wrong, at least I'll know. And then I can begin to fix whatever is going on with me that's causing me to go down this road, right? Because my family was, you know, there was this big thing in my family. I don't know where it started. I never did find out where this started, but it was almost like anybody that had a dream. It was, you know, like dreamers were very irresponsible people to them. And my dad was a bit of a dreamer, and he got ripped. He had a couple failures, and I remember my mom ripped him so bad. They were divorced at the time, but I witnessed what she thought about him, you know, and it wasn't, there was nothing good about it. So I needed to know for me, and I was willing to live with the consequences. I literally had a hardball conversation with myself that I have to know. I can't go to my grave not knowing. And somebody said to me, what if you fail? And I said, then I'll live with it. Then that's my, I'll live with it. But I need to know. I can't keep doing this because it's tearing me apart. I've been doing this for a year and it's not stopping. I wake up in the middle of the night, it's driving me out of my mind. I really feel like I'm being guided, whether it's God or spirit or my higher self. I don't know what the hell it is. It could be a broomstick in the closet for all I know at this point. But I know that I can't keep doing this. I have to move forward or I have to just completely give all this nonsense up that I'm studying and go back to finding a way to be happy in working where I'm working. And that was when I quit. I quit. And I really set up parameters because we didn't tell anybody. I mean, the people that I worked for knew I quit, but nobody else knew. It was just me and my wife that knew at the time. Well, my next door neighbor knew, but that was it, which is a whole nother story I won't go into here. But the it's not a bad story either. But nobody else knew. Didn't tell my family, didn't tell
anybody. Well, and that's why you always say be careful who you share your dream with, right? Because they could totally spin you off into another direction that you did not intend to go upon because you didn't want to
share. Well, I knew that they would, and that really wasn't the reason. The reason was because I wanted to see. I didn't want to think in some way I was manipulating the universe. That may sound weird, right? But it's kind of like, oh, I'm doing this. Am I putting out like I'm doing this, feel sorry for me, offer me some kind of a position? Or like, even that sounds kind of hokey to me. I needed to know if this was generally, if there was genuinely this purpose that was trying to get to me, but I was blocking it. So I was like, I'm not going to tell anybody. If this is between me and God, right? So I'm going to quit. Let's see what happens. And it wasn't even 30 days that I quit. And the offer came for me to do this for a living. And at first I was like, no, that's not it. Right. I was like, sure. I was like, no, that's not it. And then I'm like, yeah, that's it. That's it. And then I didn't turn back. I made the decision, didn't turn back.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive because it sounded like you went against programming, you went against type, although you did mention your dad was sort of the dreamer and your mom kind of knocked that down a little bit. You went against type and programming and you basically said, I'm going to follow this and I'm going to do it my way.
I did.
And I think that's so cool.
I did.
I love that. All right, well, let's close this out by talking about your favorite law, which you mentioned, the law of polarity, and as it relates to the idea of poverty and wealth. Whenever you teach this, you talk about poverty and wealth, but the overarching concept is abundance. So the two things being extremes, poverty on one side, wealth on the other, but it's all abundant. You can have an abundance of poverty. You can have abundance of wealth.
Right.
We often look in our bank account to gauge where we are on this line, which you mentioned. If you're experiencing one of these, the other is simultaneously here at the same time, basic law of polarity stuff. For someone who says they don't have something, what would you say to show them that it's here? I don't have this, but it is here.
I would not show them. I would explain the law to them and I would explain that you're not going to get it till you make the decision. But what I would do is I would tell them how to make the decision. I would show them how to make the decision. And then I would show them what they need to do in their own behavior to prove to themselves that it was there. And I would explain this. You have to be willing to do it 100%. Because if you don't do it 100%, you won't manifest it. So you need to be 100% all in. If you're willing to do exactly what I show you, you can manifest whatever it is that you want. I mean, I tell people all the time in seminars, everybody has the ability to turn their annual income into a monthly income, and you can do it this month. If you truly have the desire to do it, you have the ability to do it, and the way to do it is already here. But you don't know, but it's not going to happen until you make the decision. So that's what I would tell them.
Plain and simple. When you decide, the thing you desire will show up.
Yep.
That's cool. All right. Well, I got a couple more callbacks that I'll also link to below for those of you who want to study more about the law of polarity, which David is a huge fan of. We've got episode 72, Show Me the Money, another classic episode. Go back and listen to that. And then a more recent one, episode 230, Cause and Effect, Being Able to Receive What's Already Here. So this was an amazing two-part series. I'm so glad you did it. Again, we'd encourage people to go back and watch the videos because this is definitely something that to be observed with the eyes. Audio is great, but the visuals are very compelling. How to Choose Beyond Your Programming, parts 1 and 2. Definitely want you to go check those out again and again and again. So David, thanks for coming inside.
You bet.
Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com /freestuff.